Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. If you'd like to be on the Voice of Liberty, Missouri Grassroots Radio, this is the Friday Night Roundtable, and as every Friday, Lisa's here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Well, things are really moving. I think the Democrats are running for cover. I think they see the writing on the wall. The polls are starting to move. The President Obama's own media is starting to turn against him. I think it's barring something unforeseen, it's going the right direction.
Yeah, it's in our favor, which is good.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that would be the only right direction, wouldn't it?
That's right.
Any other direction would be the wrong direction. So, did you hear the clips from the Al Smith dinner?
I did, and I've been laughing about it all day. Did you get a chance to download any of them today?
I downloaded the whole thing, actually, and put a couple blurbs from it on my social network page. One particularly where I actually put three of Obama's lines up there where he says, everyone please take a seat, otherwise Clint Eastwood will yell at you. And earlier today I went shopping at some stores in Midtown. Governor Romney went shopping for some stores in Midtown, and then he followed that with, the unemployment rate is at its lowest level since I took office. I don't have a joke for that.
Which is the joke, as far as I'm
Which is the from. Joke. That's absolutely right. I followed that up with, get it, question mark. So, that is the joke. Yeah,
and Romney has great ones, too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think the majority of people on the right think Romney did best. I'm sure the majority of people on the left think Obama did best. It really was just kind of a, I'm not sure how good a time the candidates had up there, but I mean, for the rest of us, I think it was just a time when you could take a minute out of all of it. You know, there was nothing up there that was unnecessarily spiteful or acrimonious. It was really kind of appeared to us to be all for fun, and they even paid compliments to each other, I think it's just kind of a minute out in a very stressful period.
I think it was probably more stressful for Obama than it was for Romney, but I'm good with that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Obama did pretty good about making fun of his debate performances, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought he had some really great lines. it was very funny. All of Romney's jabs were jabbing Obama, and all of Obama's jabs were jabbing Obama, pretty much.
Romney made a couple of good jabs at himself there. He said, "What was it?" A couple of things that I thought were pretty good, where he made some fun of himself, and none of them come to mind right now. I was really paying more attention to the things that Obama said. But some very, very important things coming up this week, and probably one of the most important is the St. Louis Cardinals are playing tonight for a chance to take the National League Championship. What are you thinking of that?
I'm thinking we are going to the series.
Absolutely. Lance Lynn, the 18-game winner, who had a very crappy game one, is coming back for another shot at redemption tonight. And Barry Zito, who's yet to appear in a postseason game, is coming to work for the Giants. Should be a good matchup. I don't look for it to be a pitching duel, quite frankly. I kind of think that it's going to be a high hit game.
Well, that'll be exciting then, and I think it'd be great for Matheny's first year as a major league coach to take a World Series championship.
Me too. And I'm really looking forward to the series. I mean, I am, aside from being one of the biggest Cardinal fans in the whole world, I am a huge Tigers fan. And so I'm really looking forward to the series and the replay of the Tigers-Cardinals matchup. It's going to be a whole different ball game than the last time they met. And I'm thinking that's going to be a great World Series. I'll still be cheering for the Cardinals, even though I'm a huge Tigers fan, but I think it'll just be good.
Yep, I'm ready to watch.
Yeah.
And it'll be a nice break from politics.
Well, speaking of politics, though, second in importance probably coming up next week is the third and final presidential debate moderated by Bob Schieffer. You want to make some predictions on that?
I think it's going to be a Romney killer. I think he'll do great with it. You cannot spin what's been going on in the Middle East. And I think, you know, all foreign policy, I think he's just going to bury Obama.
Well, I think you're right. And I think as the days go by, I mean, I think Obama is hurt worse in the upcoming debate by every day that goes by. More and more stuff about the Benghazi problem is coming to light. The United States has dropped troops now into Jordan, and nobody seems to know that yet. But in the next two or three days, that kind of news is going to start breaking out, and we may even lose some American lives over there. I think day by day, and you know, if I was Mitt Romney, I would even throw some Fast and Furious in there and call that foreign affairs.
Without question. I mean, he needs to hit on all of it. It's just, you know, the entire world is about ready to blow up, and it's only, you know, it's gotten much worse in the last 4 years. It certainly wasn't in this shape. It wasn't in great shape, but it wasn't in this shape when Obama took office, and it's, you know, you can't,
absolutely.
And blame Bush for everything.
No, that's right. I mean, and even as we talk about how bad things are, you've got a president up there campaigning on further cuts to defense.
Yes, exactly.
It's incredible.
And, you know, hopefully, people get this peace through strength thing down and understand just how serious it is. And when Romney gets elected, we'll shift things around, start drilling, improving the energy issue here, and building up the defense again.
Well, I mean, we can only hope so. That's absolutely paramount in my mind. And did you read the little blurb I put up this week from that I actually stole from? It was really, really good. I actually stole it from a Dan McLaughlin blog, and then went on to blog about the thing. But did you read the thing I put up that he wrote in a baseball blog some time ago? Actually, it was some time ago. It was like on December 13th. 2001, right after September 11, he wrote that about a scene out of The Hobbit. Did you follow The Hobbit and the three Hobbit trilogy movies?
Oh, yeah, lightly.
Yeah. Well, he talks about this scene where Frodo, who was the adventuresome Hobbit who struck out to solve the ring thing.
Yeah.
And he talked about how Frodo had run into Strider. He talked about a conversation that went on between Frodo and Strider, where Frodo asked Strider, and Strider was one of the line of kings, one of the men, the mighty men, who'd been kind of patrolling around the Shire where the hobbits lived for decades, and keeping out all the evil things, all the orcs and the goblins and all the forces of evil away from the Shire, unbeknownst to any of the hobbits who were running around the Shire just minding their own little business and worried about their afternoon teas and their gardens and things like that without a care in the world. And Frodo asked Strider once, did he not resent the hobbits for all of this piddly little nonsensical life that they lived in the Shire while such danger was going on in the world around them and not even realizing what was going on? And Strider said back to Frodo, said, no, he said, I don't resent them at all. He said, you know, the pettiness of their life is proof to me that I've done my job. You know, that they can go on day to day worrying about their teas without ever even knowing the danger that lurks in the world around them. That means that I've done my job in protecting the Shire from evil. And then McLaughlin goes on to say, you know, that is a perfect descriptive analogy of our defense, our defense department, that we can go day to day worried about World Series and who's going to be the MVP and what deodorant is best to wear and what tampon we should have, while all of this danger is going on in the world and it has very little effect on our day-to-day life, while Israeli children wake up and they live with our September 11th every day when they go to the shopping mall and the mortars come flying into Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and Haifa. Lebanese women and children who have people who for decades, for their entire life, had had people killing one another on their front lawn, and Afghan women and children who are massacred in their schools and in their playgrounds, and that's just such a way of life for them. And here we are, you know, wandering around the streets of our town arguing about whose fault high gas prices are, and you know, it speaks volumes about the defense of our country that we can do that without any understanding even of what's going on in the world around us.
Yeah, Americans are going to get a wake-up call, though. I think that, you know, I think that things have gotten so out of hand that we're not going to be able to fix this without feeling it this time. I think it's going to change. The world will change if it hasn't changed already. Well, things are just too out of hand. I think we're about to enter a global war here. And it's too big, and we've let our defenses get too depleted to be able to fix this before, you know, without us feeling it first.
Well, and you may well be right, but you know, I mean, even, and this is what I went on to talk about in my blog about the folks who say we need to bring all these save $3 trillion a year and bring all these troops home to our own little Shire. And just wait and not worry about defending ourselves till someone attacks us. And you know, that's the point. I mean, even in World War I and World War II, we felt secure in our cities.
Yeah, but we don't. I mean, those days are gone, right? I mean, they fly planes into buildings now on our soil, and we know that we're not safe here in this country anymore.
Well,
it's just a matter of time before it blows up. There will be something.
I don't know. I think we've done a fair job so far, and I think if we keep our money in the right places, that we can continue probably to the greatest extent to protect ourselves. I mean, yeah, we got bombed up in World War II. We got Pearl Harbor got attacked, and then we had the 9/11 thing. And if we could go another 55 years without an incident, I think we could call ourselves quite successful.
Yeah, I think that we'd be very successful. I don't have the faith in the ability. I don't think that kind of I don't think we have that buffer anymore. I think things have, you know, especially over the last 4 years. I think we had it before Bush left. But I think in the last 4 years, we've deteriorated things to such a degree that that's not the way it is anymore.
Well, I don't, Yeah, maybe. You may well be right. We'll see. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about some more cool stuff. We're going to lay the stage for the debate a little bit more, and we're going to talk quite a bit about Proposition or Amendment 3, which Lisa touched on Wednesday night, and which we really need to talk a little bit more about. We'll be back in about a minute and a half.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Stories from the environmentalists that put forth the idea that oil fracking is destroying the earth. Of course, until they test the water before any fracking is performed, they are mostly political in nature to fit their agenda. For instance, the movie Grassland sounded terrible until it was discovered that the water there had been ignitable for decades in a well-known natural occurrence. Did anyone notice the fact was left out of the movie? If there are dangers or downsides, we need that confirmed and remedied, but must not let this government limit our ability to produce our own energy. We could become a third world country overnight if the Saudis decide to cut off our oil. Do we want to chance that? Fracking has been going on for decades. It was only when it appeared that natural gas was going to be the energy of the future instead of solar and wind, the big stink came about. I believe the extreme environmentalists and the folks who want to implement Agenda 21 are behind this scare. Another little-known fact is that the poster child of green energy, Germany, has given up on solar and wind after spending millions and millions on subsidies. German President Merkel is a realist and wants to save the economy of her country. Therefore, Germany is in the process of building over 30 coal-fired plants in her country, and we are shutting down our coal plants. What does that say to you? We need the energy that it produces to stay energy independent. The environmental nightmares of the green energies are never discussed. Have you ever asked yourself why? I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute. I've got a feeling that the
night is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Missouri Grassroots Radio, Dave and Lisa, the Friday Night Roundtable, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We have Jeff from Boston. How you doing, Jeff?
Be good if we left. Hold on, we got to get him live. Okay, now
okay.
He's live. Oh, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Oh, Jim.
Oh,
Jim,
yes,
I'm sorry.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
I'm not doing too bad. I thought I would just scan the Blog Talk stations out here tonight, and I've been meaning to call yours next, you know, and I just heard your commercial there about the energy.
Yeah.
And we had a company here in Waltham, Massachusetts called A123. They were making the batteries for the electric cars, and they got like $250 million from we the taxpayers, and they filed bankruptcy.
Absolutely.
And now Johnson Controls and a Chinese company are going to court to assume the debts and everything of this company. You know, and when I keep hearing things like this, between all the other energy companies that, you know, Obama wasted our money on almost $100 billion now is the latest count. I'm saying, what's wrong with the stuff we have now in this country? I mean, coal is very cheap because my house is run on electric. I have electric heat, hot water, and stove. And I'm up here in the Northeast, and you know, we have some pretty darn cold winters. And, you know, I'd like to see us, this country, this EPA chief, Lisa Jackson is her name, stop attacking the coal industry. You know, because they're shutting one of the coal plants down, and something like 2,000 American workers, taxpayers, are going to be losing their jobs.
Oh, you
and I don't know how this guy in the White House can say that he's for the middle class. When
absolutely. You hit that one on the head. We're in Missouri. We're from the Midwest.
Where are you at?
We have coal industry corporate offices here in the Midwest in St. Louis, and they're just getting slammed. You know, it's just and it's a big issue for Missouri. We have a huge hot Senate race here, mm-hmm. and we have very opposed candidates on the energy issue. You couldn't have hit the nail more squarely on the head than you have. It's absolutely the coal industry is just getting slammed right now.
Now, Canada is supposed to be shutting down some of its pipeline that comes into the United States. I didn't get the full story on it, but I don't know how much it's going to affect us. And, you know, I mean, what he said earlier about the fracking process, you know, I mean, everything today can be done at a safe level, if not even safer than what people believe. I mean, that's what I believe. But you have these wacko environmentalists, the hardcore, let's put everybody back on horseback to get around. You know, I mean, when you have to stop something because of a flower, an owl, or some type of fish is floating in the water, you know, you're stopping people from trying to make a living to support their families. You know, and apparently this EPA dictatorship doesn't see it that way. You know, like I said, her name is Lisa Jackson. And as a matter of fact, this is how far she's gone. I think it's the state of Nebraska. Correct me if I'm wrong or you can fact check it. But the state of Nebraska has drones flying over them because the EPA wants them to have them flown over there.
You're correct. You are correct. Yes, there are drones flying over Nebraska and some over Idaho.
Yes, and now it was a Channel 5 News, WCVB-TV here in Boston, about a month and a half ago, Heather Unruh, she's one of the anchors, and she was telling that story, and she says, Massachusetts is next. And she looked at her co-host, her co-anchor, and she says, why are they doing this? You know, I mean, there's no rhyme or reason, but, you know, I look at it this way. It's 1984, even though it's rather late. We're in 2012, pushing 2013, George Orwell. And it's amazing what this traitor in the White House and his underlings there, all his czars who circumvent our Constitution, what they're getting away with, and the people are like sheep. They're lying down and taking us. I just don't get it.
Where are you from in Boston, Jim?
I'm just north of Boston, a city called Wakefield.
I was raised in West Medford.
Oh, West Medford? I'm originally out of Chelsea.
Yeah, I was born at Chelsea Naval.
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was brought up around the Soldiers Home Hospital.
Yeah. I know the area well. So what's the liberal state going to do with Romney Obama?
Well, of course, they're going to go with Obama.
Are they? Really?
There's no ands, ifs, and buts about it. I mean, when Ted Kennedy was alive, he always kept getting reelected. And, of course, I always vote for the other guy. And people say, well, how did he get reelected? I says, well, I didn't vote for him. Somebody had to, and they keep reelecting him. The mentality from our grandparents back in the 20s and 30s who believed in the true Democratic Party of then up until the mid-60s has gone. But the people here, they're still brainwashed that the Democrats are the working man's friend.
Absolutely. You know, I was just telling Lisa and I were just talking the other night, and well, I mean, and we've talked about this several times. Lisa's known this for quite some time, but I was a Truman Kennedy Democrat myself.
Yeah, now Jack Kennedy, if he was alive today, he'd be run out of the Democratic Party.
He would, yeah. He would be running as a Republican. Although he was pro-union, but he was very, very heavy into national defense. He was very strong, and he was the first president of the modern era to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that reduced taxes increases federal revenue.
Yeah, because you get more people working. People want to start up a business. But the Democratic Party, you know, I mean, they sold me out. Now, I work for the post office. And today, one of the shop stewards walked up to me, and he says, are you going to vote for John Tierney or Richard Tessay? Richard Tessay is a Republican. Congressman Tierney, who's had trouble with his brothers-in-laws with the illegal gambling and his wife laundering something like $7 million that he didn't know about. And I says, no, I says, I'm not going to vote Democrat. He says, well, our jobs are at stake. Like I said, I work for the post office. And we're in a bind. And we know, I know, that the Republican Party is after the post office. They want to privatize us, if not smash us up completely. But I told the guy, I says, look, when George Bush's last 2 years, the Democrats, who were supposed to be for the working man, they sold us out. They had a supermajority to reverse the course of the post office. We have to make a payment, an annual payment of $5 billion a year to pre-fund health and retirement benefits. No other company, corporation, or agency does that but the post office. And then when Obama gets elected, I thought, well, hey, maybe now they got the White House. The Democrats still have control, as I'm telling my partner, this shop steward. I says, how come they didn't do anything for us? I said, the Democrats threw us under the bus, and you want me to vote for them, and they don't give a hoot for us either, just as much as the Republicans. And I told them, I says, you know, that's it. I said, I'm going Republican. Ever since I could vote in 1972, I've always gone Republican. You know, I mean, I just don't trust the Democratic Party anymore. I mean, for years I've never trusted them, but now the full colors of their party has really shown out.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I'm a libertarian. I am not anti-union, as most of my conservative friends are. And I'm not pro-union, as most of my liberal friends are. I'm absolutely neutral on it as a libertarian. I think that the government and the union should just not be in bed together. Ever at any time, there should be no laws favoring or disfavoring the union. But at the same time, you know, what you've just discussed there is something that I am against, and that is a union of people working for my tax dollars, politicking. You know, there should be no partisan politicking in a federal union.
No, because my union posted up on the bulletin board, you know, basically, if you read between the lines, vote Democrat. And I'm saying that's the Hatch Act.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean they, you know, and one of the other guys I work with, you know, he's all set to rip it down because him and I think alike. And I says, you know, it's done and over with. I says, the union leadership is the corrupt. It's the rank and file that I work with. I got some guys that are on my side at work, which is surprising. But yet then, because they're like me, they've been former military. I served in the Marine Corps, 72 to 76, and I put my country first before my job.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your service, and yeah.
It was a pleasure to serve, believe me. I wish I would have stayed in and did the 20, you know. But, you know, a lot of people in the post office, you know, they keep saying, gee, Foss, you know, our jobs are at stake. And I says, well, if you don't have a country that's going to be almost like Europe is today, I says, we're not even going to have a job. I mean, look at what's happening in Greece now. I mean, it's even getting worse. I was watching the BBC News tonight. And Greece, I'll tell you, it's getting nasty over there, real nasty. And, you know, and I tell people, and they look at me like I'm nuts.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Because if I was to lose my job, I'm pushing 59. I can find a job. I talked it over with my wife one night, and I explained things to her. She's pretty much, you know, leaning to the right of the middle now. And I told her, I says, if anything was to happen with the post office, I'd go to North Dakota. And she says, would you? And I says, yeah. I says, the work is out there, the oil fields that are out there, and the money's good.
Yeah.
There is work out there, but you got to get off your butt and look for it.
Well, hopefully that'll all change in a couple of weeks.
Yes, what we got? What, 18 more days?
Yep.
18 days.
And I can't wait because I'm getting tired of the commercials up here in Massachusetts seeing Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown. Oh God, every 2 seconds they got a commercial on, and it's nerve wracking. Now you're down in Missouri. Now that's McCaskill country, right?
That's right, and we're going to change that too in a few days.
Okay, now how's that going down there? Because she sold herself out to Obama under Obamacare when they were coming up for the vote there a couple of years ago.
Thank you very much. I'm glad other people are noticing. Yes, she did.
Yeah, she would. I forget how much they bribed her with. I forget how much money was involved there, you know.
Well, she's an ambitious woman, and I'm sure that she was looking out for her political career.
Oh, yeah,
at the
they
time,
all do.
And Obama was elected with such overwhelming, love and admiration that she probably figured she was going to ride his coattails through his administration, and probably didn't expect him to receive, you know, the turn that he's received over the last many months.
Now, who's running up against? I forget the gentleman's name.
Todd Aiken.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because like I said, you know, when I, Claire McCaskill, I said, geez, you know, she went along with this abomination of health care plan. And now, you know, we discussed this at work, too, you know, and I said, you know something, guys? I says McDonald's, Red Lobster, Olive Garden, and various other, you know, chain restaurants, they're all dropping their 40-hour employees down to part-time, 30 hours a week.
That's right.
Because they'd just as soon take the penalty than pay for the Obamacare.
Absolutely. And they're not going to be the only ones. If it continues, it's just going to get worse.
Oh, it is. And people fail to realize that. You know, and I had mentioned it about the Bush tax cuts that are going to expire in January. And, of course, how the lamestream media is, oh, those things are only for the rich, the millionaires and billionaires. That's another cliche I'm getting sick of hearing up here in Massachusetts from Lizzie Warren there, the Democrat moonbat. I tell people, I says, Fox News had it on. And they had it that, like, I think it's on an average we pay, like a working guy like myself and you folks too, 26% in taxes. Well, once the Bush tax cuts expire, as I'm trying to educate others at work, I says, you're looking at 33-34%. I says, those tax cuts aren't favoring the rich. They're helping us, too. And I says, if they don't renew them, I says, guess what, pals? I says, our taxes are going up. Oh, no, you know? It's funny how people up here, at least in the northeast liberal region of the country, keep the blinders on.
Absolutely, and not only that, Jim, but millionaires and billionaires, quote unquote, for Obama and the Democratic Party start at $250,000. They don't start at $1 million. That starts the people he wants to raise taxes on starts at $250,000. Well, you know, that's the guy that repairs your car, and that's your dry cleaner, and that's the guy who owns the Red Lobster, and that's, you know, these are the people who hire waitresses and waiters and mechanics and counter help.
And think about what that's like in different parts of the country. In the East Coast, in Boston, where $250,000 doesn't mean the same thing as it does here in the Midwest, where the cost of living is much less.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they just they fail to realize that. And then I was telling, you know, because, you know, I have a nephew. He's been a Navy SEAL now for about 17 years now, roughly. He's got over 20 years, but he's been a SEAL for the last 17 years. And I tell these guys, I says, you know what's going to happen, too, with these Bush tax cuts? When they expire, it's going to hit the Defense Department. Now, last time something like this happened, it was under Bill Clinton. And there were men and women in our armed forces, 18, 19 years, a year and a half, 2 years to go to retirement. They were the ones that were let go.
Right.
Because they didn't have to pay them their pension.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering, is this clown in the White House going to do the same thing to these men and women who are in uniform today, who've got their 17, 18, 19 years, and are they going to get cut short and end up with no pension?
Well, I think it's already happening. I think it's already going on.
Yeah, because one of the other blog talk stations I go to also was saying that the Marine Corps is doing it.
Yeah, I think people are already being forced out. Higher level officers are being forced out and forced to retire early or forced out because they, you know, they're trying to thin down the military.
Yeah, and then I tell some of the guys, there's a couple of guys understand me. You know, it's nice, but it's difficult up here. Like I said, you know, my neighbors, they don't follow the politics like I do. I mean, people know the stats from Babe Ruth all the way up until Kyle Yastrzemski, for example. My passion is politics and paying attention to what's going on. And, you know, like I said, it's like, was it Military Times? They did a survey about 2 weeks ago, and 66% of our men and women in uniform are going with Romney.
Yep.
And Obama, he got like 26%. So, I mean, apparently the men and women, they, well, of course, they know what's going on because some of these people, they know there's nothing out here, and they want to make a career out of serving our country. And this clown in the White House, along with his czars, hey, let's cut our military down, make us even weaker now.
And aren't you so tired? Aren't you so tired of every candidate, from the president to your local city councilman, trying to pander to your vote as a vet?
Well, so far I haven't had that. I got one letter from my congressman, John Tanney, out of the sixth district, and you know, I just crumble it up and throw it away because I had a community meeting with him. You know, we up here at the local public library. And this here was back in 2008. And I had mentioned about the illegal alien situation. And I said, you know, we got to do something to secure our border. I said, the drugs, I said, terrorists are coming over the border. As a matter of fact, they just had a bust here in Boston 3 weeks ago, roughly. And it was a major cartel member that they busted. He's trying to set up shop like we need another dope dealer up here. And but they busted him and his henchmen, and they just came walking over the border. And so my congressman, John Tanney, looked at me with the audience and everything, and he says, well, if you build a 10-foot-high wall, they're just going to use an 11-foot ladder. Such a condescending SOB. And I say, well, I'll remember this come election time. And I called up the guy that he's running up against, and I told him the story when it happened. And I don't know if he's going to use it against them, but, you know, I hope he does. But, no, I don't like politicians pandering to me because, you know, when I do write, you know, John Kerry, I used to write to John Kerry because Kerry has been good with veterans. But he never spelt my last name right. All the correspondence, I would print my name and I would get it sent back. I says, well, these people aren't paying attention to me in the long run because all I get is a form letter.
Yeah, excuse us for just 1 minute, Jim, because
sure.
most of our listeners are not privileged enough to be from Boston and are from Missouri. So I want to just break this with a news break. The Cardinals.
No, I'm wrong. Sorry, don't break it.
The Cardinals have one on and nobody out. In the bottom of the second, Yadier Molina just singled and is standing on first base with nobody out. So we're keeping you updated here on what's going on. Now,
all right,
Jeff,
great.
Or Jim, that was a great introduction. I enjoyed every minute of it, but that's not what you called to talk about. You called to talk about Libya.
Yes. I watched those hearings earlier during the week, and they had asked, I forget the gentleman's name, but he was one of the military advisors that were over there. And they asked about the surface, the shoulder-fired air missiles.
Right.
And they says, how many are missing? And the reply was between 10 and 20,000. Well, the other day, I was watching the BBC News, and guess what? They shot down a helicopter with a shoulder-fired missile, the Grail, GRAIL-7 missile.
Yep.
Shoulder-fired, and they shot it right out of the sky because you can hear the ragheads going, ah, Akbar, and boom, the helicopter totally disintegrated. Because there was two Navy SEALs. One was from Massachusetts, and I forget where the other hero was from. Their mission was over there originally, was to track as many of those missiles that were missing. They got the call to run over to the consulate's office, and that's when all four of them were killed.
Right.
But their primary job was to track down all these missiles, 10 to 20,000. And if people remember, well, Muammar Gaddafi had over 500 al-Qaeda jihadists in his prisons until they overthrew him. They killed him and they let him out free. So now you got 500 of these guys. You get anywhere from 10 to 20,000 shoulder-fired missiles running around that can bring down a 737.
That's right. Oh. That's right. And what we're going to find out, Jim, is that these aren't, well, I mean, yes, they are missing, but they weren't stolen. These were fast and furious weapons that were given to the Muslim Brotherhood by this administration. We armed the Muslim Brotherhood.
And, you know, it's such an insult. I mean, now the people in Egypt are turning on the Brotherhood. And somebody from, I think it was gutter over there, they want to form up an alliance to fight the Brotherhood,
you're right,
the Muslim Brotherhood. I was kind of shocked. I'm saying, oh, maybe they're going to wake up finally and see the light, you know?
Well, I'm
but
sure
you know
they
what?
Are.
Pardon me?
I'm sure they
Muslim
are.
Muslim factions have been fighting Muslim factions for thousands of years. I mean,
yeah,
you know, if they eliminate the Brotherhood, it'll just be another Muslim faction taking control, and they're still not going to be allies of the United States.
No, they never will be, you know, and I've been, you know, on the internet, and I keep saying, you know, Obama came out with a perfect statement at a speech he gave not too long ago, just about maybe a month back or so. He says, Egypt is neither an ally or an enemy. So why did he, of course, I know Egypt gets an annual bribe money of a little over $1 billion a year. But on top of that, he just gave them another additional $450 million. Well, if these people aren't our friends and they're not our enemies, let's cut the money off. Give it to somebody who really needs it, who is our friend over there, and that's Israel. You know, I just don't understand why he throws out my, well, the government, not just him, but our government, throws out money left and right to the Arab world, and yet then they turn around and they're going to do things to us, no matter who it is, you know. It's better to keep the devil you know with Hosni Mubarak and Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, everything was nice and quiet over there until, you know, this clown in the White House decided to back the bad guys.
Well, I think until we get a peace through strength president in office, and we build back up our military, and they understand over there that we're not going to take that kind of stuff laying down anymore the way we have for so very long, I think that's what you're going to get. I think that you're going to get more of the same, and it's only going to get worse. And I really do believe that unless we have just a sea change in foreign policy and foreign policy leadership, we're going to see something here on American soil before too long.
Oh, yeah. There'll be not as great as, well, I can't say 9/11 was great, but not as a great catastrophe as 9/11. But, you know, it's going to be the smaller things. You know, the Holland Tunnel, the Golden Gate Bridge possibly. You know, I mean, when Obama showed his hand, well, we're going to pull our troops out of Afghanistan by 2014, what happened after that? It was what they call blue on green. Afghan police killing our troops from behind. And they just had another shooting there about 2 days back. Afghan policemen turning their weapons on Canadians and U.S. troops. I mean, he showed his weakness, and this is what these people like. Show weakness to them, and they're going to jump on you.
I can't disagree with that at all.
You know, and it frustrates me and probably tens of millions of Americans out here. You know, why do we have to get involved? But I do have to give credit to one congressman at that Libya hearing, Dennis Kucinich from Ohio. He's a real lefty, but he said it perfectly, and I almost fell off the chair. He says every time we get involved somewhere over there, we make matters worse. I mean, Iraq is going to have a major civil war. We leave Afghanistan, they're going to turn on each other again. And I look at it this way: U.S. blood is not worth Muslim for any Muslim. Our blood is too valuable to waste on Muslims.
I think
period.
I would agree with you there, because here's the problem with what we've been doing over there: we've been going over there and fighting with our hands tied behind our back. We've not been going over there and taking care of business the way we need to take care of business. We've been playing by somebody else's rules and putting our men and women in harm's way, and we weren't serious about really taking care of the job. And, you know, Dennis Kucinich makes a great statement, you know, because we have not been successful over there. We've not been successful in taking care of things and putting things in order, because we haven't been a peace through strength. We haven't had a peace defense. But if we would go over there the way we used to have a military when I was growing up and when you were growing up, people were afraid to mess with the United States because we meant business. And when we showed up someplace, they knew that we were going to do whatever it took to take care of the job, regardless, you know, of whatever it needed to happen. You know,
well,
and people were afraid of that.
That's not
the way it is anymore.
That's not totally how it was when you were growing up. I mean, we had our hands tied behind our backs just as much in Vietnam and Korea as we.
Well, in Vietnam, Vietnam on, our foreign policy has just gone down the toilet. But prior to Vietnam, America was a country to be feared because we were serious about getting involved in these issues, and we wouldn't go in there and put our men and women in harm's way for political reasons. We went in there to take care of business.
Now, but these two things that are both unnecessary evils go hand in hand. First of all, this complaint, this correct complaint that some on the left and many on the right have nowadays, that we get involved in things we should not be involved in, and those are accurate assessments. Vietnam, Iraq, we have been involved up to our hips in things we shouldn't be involved in, and this other thing of not fighting wars as though they were wars. Those two things go hand in hand. You know, if we were to say we are not going into any place unless the specific interest of the United States is at risk. And when we go, we're going to kill everybody there.
That's it. No holds barred. It's
That's
just
right.
Like now.
As soon as an American boot hits the ground, we don't leave till we've shed all the blood we need to shed.
It's just like there's a leftover from the Bill Clinton administration. I can't remember the woman's name, but of course, you know, Bill Clinton was way back, so to speak. But she got embedded in with the Defense Department through the Obama administration as some type of undersecretary of defense. And she put it out there, well over a year ago, 2 years back, I think it was roughly, that if somebody was shooting at, just like Vietnam, on the Cambodian border, you got shot at from Cambodia, you couldn't return fire because Cambodia was neutral. But over in Afghanistan, if, say, like, you know, a Taliban was shooting at you and you're all set to return fire and he dropped his weapon, you can't shoot him because he's an unarmed combatant now. This was inserted by, like, I wish to God I could remember the woman's name, but she's a leftover from the Bill Clinton administration who's still with some, like I said, an undersecretary of defense, you know, down below on the scale. But that's the rules. You cannot shoot at somebody who shoots at you, and if they drop their weapon, they're an unarmed combatant. And I'm shocked that, you know, there's not an outcry, but yet an outcry from the American people, but the lamestream media and the newspapers, everybody is in cahoots. They don't want to make this administration look any worse than it is now.
Your turn, Alicia.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
You know, I think it's all about
politics, and it's all about keeping the party in power. It doesn't have anything to do with doing the right thing or protecting the country, which
no.
To me, I mean, marks traitorism. You know, I don't know why there's not impeachment trials or, you know, charges of traitor.
They've kicked that ward around a couple of times, the Republicans, you know, like against Holder, that traitor, and Obama. But, you know, the political correctness is embedded in with the Republican Party, too. I mean, I like to consider myself an American conservative. Everybody thinks I'm a Republican. Well, there's only two parties, if you really look at it, in the long run. I mean, the presidential commission, if you don't get 15% of the votes here in this country, you can't be on any presidential debate. So it's Democrat, Republican, one gets in, one gets out, and they screw things up, and the other party gets in, and boom. I mean, there's no fair representation in the government anymore, and they set their rules, and the rules are jeopardizing our troops and our men and women overseas because, you know, well, we want to show the world we're politically correct and we're nice about it. Do you think the North Koreans are going to be nice, the Chinese or the Russians?
Absolutely not. Jeff, we're up against a hard break here.
I want to thank you very much for this airtime, you know.
One more thing before you go, though, Jim.
Sure.
Cardinals or Tigers?
I'm going to go with the Cardinals. Because I have my father's family was from originally St. Louis way back, you know, in the 20s and 30s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when our Red Sox were playing the Cardinals in the World Series, the people that went from Boston out to St. Louis there to say, they said the people were so darn friendly. And I says, yeah, and they are out there. So, like I said, I'm going to be rooting for the Cardinals.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I was a kid, they were pretty friendly at Fenley. It might not be that way now, but you know how old I am? I am old enough that my daddy gave me $2. I walked down to the corner of Cottage Street in West Medford, caught the bus to Fenway, saw a game, and rode the bus home for $2.
For $2, you probably pay 50 cents for bleacher seats.
50 cents for bleacher seats and a quarter for the bus each way, and had myself a popcorn while I was there.
Son of a gun. Okay, you're not that far. You're ahead of me, but not that far.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, thanks a lot, and God save America, everybody.
Hey, absolutely. Jim, I'm sorry. I keep calling you Jeff because that's what's written here. Thanks, Jim. We'll call back, son.
I certainly will. Thanks a lot. Good night.
That was Jim from Boston. He called in to talk about the Libyan situation, and we ended up talking to him about quite a few things. We're going to take a quick break. Lisa and I are going to come back and bounce Amendment 3 around for a little bit.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Missouri Grassroots Radio, it's the Friday Night Roundtable. Lisa's here, Dave's here, and we're talking about Amendment 3 now, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We just got off the phone with Jim from Boston. That was a pretty good discussion, wasn't it, Lisa?
Yeah, he seems to know his stuff, and it's kind of nice to know that there are some conservatives on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are some conservatives up there in the Boston area. It's quite a military-industrial complex up there around Boston, Lexington, Concord. And so there's still quite a bit of military attachment up in and around there. So, folks, before we move on to the less important stuff, let's take care of some important things right now. The first important thing is the St. Louis Cardinals blew a perfect chance. They had the bases loaded and one out. They intentionally walked Pete Cosma. Lance Lynn got up and grounded into a double play, so that shot that. And right now, the Giants are back up. It's two outs with a runner on second, and we're looking at the Cardinals coming back to bat in just a minute. Giants are back to the top of the lineup. Angel Pagan is batting, and it's a 2-1 count. So the second important thing, and just as important as the Cardinals, is I played the wrong ad there. That was supposed to be the Secret Santa ad, so Lisa and I are just going to add it for a minute or two. Secret Santa is a project that we have at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. We started it last year, our first year in existence. We got $250, and we have a goal this year of $500. With that $500, we'll help at least four families bail on Christmas Eve, bail layaways that they otherwise, because of conditions or circumstances, would not be able to get out of layaway in time for Christmas morning and for their children on Christmas morning. It will be a layaway of toys, and it will be for children. And every dime that you send to Secret Santa will go to that cause, and I think we're about three-fourths there, aren't we, Lisa?
That's the way I understand it, and time is running out, so we're not asking for that much money.
We're not asking for much at all. Send us a buck, send us $2, send us $5, although we won't turn down $100, and we will and we've had several $100 donors, so we'll take that if it comes. But $1, $2 from a good number of people will get us there as well. And don't worry if you feel like sending $100, because we're not absolutely going to stop at $500. If we get there, we'll take $750 and help six families, or $1,000 and help eight. We'll be glad to do that. And the more, the merrier for us, because what we're going to do next year is we're going to make our goal double whatever we get this year. So if you really want to see us begging you next year, give us $1,000 this year so that we're going for $2,000 next year, and we'll be on our hands and knees for that. So do it. Every dime you send in is going to go to the project. There's no overhead, not a penny. Not a penny of advertising. Nobody gets a salary. There's not a penny of overhead. Every penny you send goes to the project. And you can do that by going to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. That's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition, spell it out, .org. Click on the Secret Santa button. It's the fourth button across on the top tabs. And donate by PayPal. Or if you don't like PayPal, get our address and send us a check or money order. And that's the Secret Santa push for tonight. Lisa, you had a very good program on Wednesday about this Amendment 3, didn't you?
Thank you. Yes, I did. We had Lauren Maloney from Commuter Patriots give us the pro-Amendment 3 stance. Lauren is a retired attorney, and his perspective basically boiled down to, you can go back and listen to the podcast, but basically boiled down to this is a step in the right direction. It's not a complete fix to the problem. He acknowledged that there were a lot of problems with the entire judiciary system and the way things are run, but this is at least a step in the right direction, and in hopes to make further steps in the future.
And I really enjoyed Lauren's presentation. I was there in studio with you on Wednesday night, just sitting there listening to what Lauren was saying, and he made some very, very good points. There are excellent points on the yes side of this question, and the question is specifically, Lisa, and let's do that for people before we get started, in case you weren't listening on Wednesday night. The question has to do not with judges, but with how judges are selected. Back in 1940, Missouri instituted what they called a nonpartisan judge selection procedure, which became known later as the Missouri Plan, and famously so, because since 1940, 35 other states have adopted this plan in some way, shape, or form. Very seldom is it adopted exactly. I don't know that it is in any one case adopted exactly the way we've written it. There are always some minor modifications, but it is still called the Missouri Plan. What happened at the turn of the century is the Pendergast machine was running politics in Kansas City, and largely in St. Louis through another political machine, which had two names, and I can't remember that machine right now. But it had reached such a point by the mid-century, the 30s, that Pendergast was actually picking the judges. I mean, it had become so corrupt that that Pendergast had all the judges in his pocket. And along with them, the entire judicial system. And of course, that just gave him more momentum to do whatever he darn well pleased, because he had all the judges. Somewhat like Chicago under Capone, if you've ever seen anything like The Untouchables. And it was in fact, just that bad in Kansas City. And so Missouri said, when Pendergast finally was jailed, and I believe for income tax evasion,
they always get them on the taxes, don't
yeah.
they?
Missouri finally said, "Well, that's it. We are done with this system. In Jackson County, which is Pendergast country in Kansas City, and in St. Louis County, and for the state Supreme Court justices and for the state appeals court justices in the three districts, we are not going to have any elections anymore. for judges. So no more will a Democrat and a Republican run against each other and say, I want to be judge, and you go vote for one of them. What we're going to do is we're going to have a panel, and the panel will pick some names, and they'll send those three names to the governor, and the governor will pick a judge from that list of three names. It's just that simple. In the circuits, it's not the governor. It is the the governor is the picker, but the list comes from some attorneys and citizens in that circuit. So that in St. Louis County or in Jackson County or now in Greene County, the judges in that circuit or the lawyers in that circuit and some citizens in that circuit actually pick the list. But statewide, anyway, the panel consists that picks these three judges consists of three attorneys appointed to the panel by the bar, and the three attorneys must come from one each from the three appellate districts, and three citizens appointed, and they must be non-attorneys, appointed to the panel by the governor, and they must be one each from the three appellate divisions. And then the seventh member of the panel is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And they want to change that panel. They don't want to change the judges. They want to change that panel that picks the candidates that are presented to the governor. So if that's not complicated enough for you, here's what they want to do. They want to take away the seventh member, that Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He'll no longer be a part. And make the seven members three attorneys appointed by the bar and three citizens and four citizens appointed by the governor. So now the bar gets to appoint three and the governor gets to appoint four. They remove the restriction from the governor that his four be non-attorneys. That is an absolute restriction on the governor now. The governor's current three have to be non-attorneys. But they remove that restriction from the governor. And in addition, the list sent up to the governor has four names on it instead of three. So what's your take, Lisa?
Well, to me, it doesn't stop the corruption because I believe that Lauren's argument was having the non-attorneys on the panel is a disadvantage because they can't keep up with the arguments from the attorneys.
And, you know, I laughed when I heard that because I love Lauren. Lauren, if you're listening tonight, I love you dearly, all right? But it would take a lawyer to say non-lawyers just aren't as smart as lawyers.
Well, I don't think he was actually saying that. I mean, I kind of think I understand what the point he was trying to make, and I probably would agree with it to a certain point, but I would go a different route for a fix with it, actually. But I can tell you, I mean, anybody who's spent any time, you know, in a court or around attorneys, they will steamroll over you because it's their playground, and they make the rules. And, you know, if you don't know what the rules are, you're not going to be able to play very effectively. And I think that's pretty much how it probably is working with this situation.
It
works in every courtroom and with every legal case, everything else. The attorneys are running the show, and you don't, you know, you're not qualified to do because to play because you don't know what the rules are.
Well, in the first place, the rules are set down by the Constitution. There are no rules that the people on the committee get to make. But Lauren's argument that civilians can't out-argue attorneys might be to some extent credible. I have a lot of attorney friends, and I don't have any trouble out-arguing any and every one of them on any point in the world. But that aside, the three civilians who are being appointed, and I say civilians as in non-attorneys, as though attorneys weren't civilians, the three non-attorneys being appointed are appointed by a governor, and they're being appointed for partisan reasons. And I don't care. I don't care how good an attorney you are. You don't get to dig your heels in any harder than somebody that was appointed for a partisan purpose.
Well, you know, I think what the problem is with this entire situation, and Lauren and I both agreed on it on Wednesday, is the whole system is set up. It's the fox guarding the hen house.
Right.
So, I mean, and even if they do manage to vote in Amendment 3, it's still going to be the fox guarding the hen house, because what happens is the governor, while he can still appoint the other four, he gets the
majority, right.
They can be attorneys. There's nothing
exactly.
To keep the governor from appointing attorneys. And Jay Nixon, most of his campaign contributions come from the Trial Lawyers Association.
Right.
So do we really believe that we're not going to have, you know, a majority of attorneys on the selection committee for judges? I don't think so. But the problem is, in reality, if you want to do this the right way and take the partisanship out of it, I think the best way to do it is the way they do it with the federal plan, you know, and have the legislature vet the candidates for the judiciary, and have them do it out in the open, you know, get their records out there, make it public, and don't appoint them to life terms, you know, like you would for the Supreme Court of the United States. But do that vetting process out in the open with the legislature. Don't put attorneys on the board. Don't have an appointed panel to do that. I think you need to put it back more into the people's hands and completely take it out of the bar. You know, the Bar Association, again, any part of that they have invested in it, it's the fox guarding the hen house.
Absolutely.
They should not be involved in it. And I think, you know, the Bar Association across the board, I mean, they run the disciplinary issues with attorneys across the state. They run everything. And, you know, there's no light shining on it for the public.
Yeah. And I mean, aside from that, I mean, you've got attorneys who are picking the kings in whose court they're going to perform.
Exactly. They're picking their own bosses.
Yeah, exactly. The judge isn't the boss, but
well, yeah,
you know,
he kind of is.
Yeah. So
because really, judges are supposed to be, they don't always, but judges are supposed to be, you know, the ultimate, you know, officer of the court. You know, they're supposed to keep the attorneys in line. They're supposed to make sure all the rules are followed. And, you know, when you've got judges or you've got attorneys picking the judges, and it just doesn't work. I'll tell you, we have a system out here in St. Charles County. This has not got to do with appellate court judges or Supreme Court judges, but it's the same thing. We have elected judges here in St. Charles County, and we have attorneys contributing to campaigns of these judges, getting them elected. So you got to take that. You got to get that process. You got to find a separation in that process, or you're not going to have a clear and fair judicial system at all.
Well, yeah, but what's more pure than the people selecting the judges themselves?
Right. But that's not really actually the situation either, because you have attorneys supporting judges for elected office. You don't find a conflict there?
No. No, oh. I don't find a conflict. I don't find a conflict in an attorney. I mean, the attorneys aren't making the selection. The attorneys are donating some money to a political campaign, sure.
And then they go and fight cases in front of that judge. You don't think that's a conflict?
I don't think it's any more of a conflict than the fact that half of the defendants that are standing before the judge have made some kind of a contribution to a campaign.
I think it's a huge conflict.
But anyway, we're not voting on that, and we might,
right.
You and I'll talk about that sometime. Yeah, so what we're voting on is this Amendment 3 thing, and yeah, I agree with you, you know, and it really doesn't have anything to do just specifically with Jay Nixon. I mean, let's suppose that we got rid of Jay Nixon and replaced him with Bill Randles. Well, is Bill Randles a trial attorney? Sure he is. You know, and what Lauren said was, well, you know, the hope then is that you know, we'd get some conservative governors along, you know, here and there, and we would be able to turn this court more conservative. But it's been 66 years since we did the Missouri plan. Face it, folks, we're in Missouri. 44 of that 66 years, we've had a Democratic governor. And 22, exactly one half of that 44, or one third of the time, we've had a Republican governor. So, you know, I don't forget the attorneys for a moment. you basically are going to have, with the governor having four members on the panel, you basically are going to have the governor, whether they're attorneys or not, picking, without any checks and balances, the judges. Because those four people on the panel owe their position to who?
Right.
That's right.
Regardless of whether or not he's picking trial attorneys to sit on that panel, it's a partisan issue.
That's right. He's got four sevenths of that panel who are dancing to his tune. And you better believe that one of those four names that comes to him is going to be the guy he wants. Because he's got 4/7 of the vote. So now what you've got is the governor single-handedly and with no checks and balances at all picking a justice of the state Supreme Court. So, you know, I keep telling myself that this is six of one, half a dozen of the other, but I'm quickly talking myself into a no vote on this thing.
Yeah, I don't think that I'm going to really support it, and I'm kind of disappointed that this is the best that they could come up with after all this time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, and they're trying to sell the people on it's such a great deal. You know, even if it was just a coin toss, the fact that that this is the best that they could do,
well,
is more than disappointing.
I don't think it's the best they can do. I think there's an agenda here, and I think the agenda has nothing to do with giving the governor more control. I think this campaign is being paid for by people who want to see the requirement that the governor's picks be non-attorneys undone. You could very well be looking at a coup by the Bar Association.
Yeah, true.
Saying, okay, well, we can go along with 4/7 of the governor. Now let's just take away the requirement that the other four members not be attorneys. Let's let them be attorneys. Well, now what do you got?
Is that the next step?
Yeah.
Is that what you're afraid of?
Well, no, it's not the next step. It's the already step if this thing passes. If this thing passes, the bar actually gains.
Oh.
They don't lose.
Yeah, because they can pick. They'll have seven attorneys on the panel.
They could have seven. They could have six. They could have five. Or they could have four, whereas now they've only got three. You know, I mean, even if it's only 4-3 for the Bar Association, you're screwed.
Right.
So I think I'm a no. I think I'm a no on three.
Yeah, I think I'm going to stay with it as well. I don't see that it really helps us.
No.
I don't see that it moves the ball down the road any farther.
I think there's no potential for help and a lot of potential for harm.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, what do you got coming up Wednesday night?
We're going to speak to Ray Cuneo. We're on Agenda 21.
I like Ray, yeah.
Yeah, Ray's doing a great job of giving us the facts piece by piece. It's a lot to digest, and he's helping us do that. And we will talk to Terry Herring, and he's going to talk a little bit about the ballot initiatives in St. Charles County and why you need to vote no on every single one of them. So if you haven't already heard me rant about it, Dave was gracious enough to let me rant on his show last week for an hour about why all of those ballot initiatives are nothing more than a power grab by a greedy county council, county executive, administration, grow the government kind of thing in St. Charles County, which is supposed to be a Republican conservative county. You need to tune in again on Wednesday and know why you need to vote on these ballot initiatives. So.
Thursday, Kevin Harnett, always exciting, always fun, the Hillbilly Logic Hour and Hillbilly Logic 2 hours. Kevin is a wise man. He's an intellectually honest arguer. He loves the country. He loves the Constitution. He loves small government. So you want to catch him on Thursday night. I don't know who he's got coming along this Thursday night, but it'll be fun and it'll be exciting. And when I say this Thursday night, I mean, of course, next week. Next Friday, of course, we'll be back with another Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. At least Lisa and I, and maybe we'll try to get someone else in here to help entertain you. Monday night, we continue with the ballot initiatives. We're going to continue talking about the ballot initiatives on Monday night, Hour of Truth. We probably won't talk a lot about Amendment 3. We'll touch it, but we pretty much whipped it tonight. We'll be talking about Prop A. We've already actually done a whole show on the tobacco tax. So we'll be talking some more about Prop A, and we'll be talking about the other one. Oh, yeah, that's right, the insurance exchanges. And so we've got to give some bad news now. It looks like Hunter Pence has hit with two on, and he – let's see. Hunter Pence –
They scored with
oh, yeah.
The man on first and third now.
Yeah. So it's now 1-0. Giants, first and third, one out. We'll let you folks go back to the TV and watch the ball game. And thanks for listening to us tonight. Be sure and catch the Hour of Truth on Election Eve. We're going to have Cynthia Davis. That's always fun. It's always entertaining. Cynthia's always a hoot. On Election Eve, it'll be more of a party than anything else, and that'll be some great fun. I missed a outing tonight. Cynthia's in Springfield tonight. I had promised I would go, and I got behind on the clock and didn't make it. I was only going to be able to go for an hour so I could get back in time for this. And I just let time get away from me, Lisa, and I didn't do it prepping for this show. So I missed that. But we'll have her on here, we hope. She's not mad at me now and won't come. I'll have to smooth that over with Donna tomorrow. Two outs now, folks. And so that's Missouri. And then, Lisa, we're happy to. This is our first announcement of this exciting thing. Lisa and I, Kevin has promised he'll be there. I think we'll probably be able to get Mike to come along on election night. We are going to do another two-hour special with live returns, live analysis, and our ever-pleasant chatter back and forth between us. That's election night, November 6th, right. We'll be here from 7:30 to 9:30. I'm expecting, quite frankly, that nationally we're going to be able to make a call by 8:30 or 9 o'clock. I'm expecting it to be that quick. So we'll be here with you from 7:30 to 9:30. We love doing that. We did that on primary night, and it was just a ton of fun. And we're looking forward to that again. So this is Missouri Grassroots Radio. You've been listening to the Friday night Missouri Grassroots Roundtable. Thanks, Lisa. I had fun.
Thank you, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you Monday night. We'll talk to you folks Monday night. And thanks for tuning in. It's always great to have some listeners.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.